This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
All right, RJ. First of all, let's get the pleasantries out of the way. How are you? Good morning. Thanks for joining us as always.
I was thinking about you yesterday, Dave, on with Mr. Michael Kay. Mm-hmm. And the way he introduced me really struck me. And it made me wonder, do you ever like listen to Mr. Michael Kay or Stephen A. Smith and try to emulate them? Like, how being in the same station, how do you do that? Like, are you comfortable being like a fan? How does it work?
What does that mean? I mean, I think they're good broadcasters, excellent broadcasters. And of course I listen to them and pick things up.
And emulate?
Of course.
Okay, good. So the way he introduced it was, he goes, I want you to listen to the show all the time. But you especially have to listen Thursday 4:45 if you want to win money, RJ Bell segment. I like that. There was just something about
Michael's
it.
Michael's very good. Michael does a great job. So thanks for
just a thought.
That
just
out.
A thought.
And we appreciate it. All right. What I said, the great RJ Bell. What are you looking for?
No, I'm just thinking.
What is it you're looking for?
It's just you and I talking. I'm just thinking. That's
all right. The great RJ Bell joins us here. If you want to win money, go the other way from his picks with Chris Canty. They're 0-2 so far on the season.
Here's the question. Here's the question. Did Canty win any of his three?
I don't know. What were your three last week, Chris? Do you remember?
Yeah, my three last week. I won the Giants game.
No, but the three that you offered to RJ, you went 2-1.
He went 2-1.
RJ, that's on you then.
I found the only loser. Okay,
you found the only loser.
All right, yeah. All right, I'll accept that.
All right, so he's going to give you the three in just a moment. Let's go around the horn. I know Rick wants to ask you about the Monday night game, which should be unbelievable. The Giants. This game gets me nervous, RJ, because San Francisco's all banged up, opened up at 6.5. Now we find out that Nick Mullins is going to be the quarterback. We don't have enough time to go through all the injuries for San Francisco. Do you like the Giants they're still getting 3.5 points despite the injuries for the Niners?
I do, and to be candid, it's one of the three picks that I was thinking about making my best bet. So what I'll say is maybe we'll go over some of the games and I can decide at the end for you what we're going to do for the show. But here's why I like it. One, you've got a team that I don't think has given up on the season, meaning 0-2 is typically the spot where it's an all-in, right? Because if you go 0-3, it's a catastrophe. You go 1-2, all of a sudden, you're one win from 500. Number two, Barkley, obviously a big loss. I wonder, though, has there been times, and I'm not saying that Barkley's not a net positive. I mean, in his absence is a negative, no doubt. But in a game here or there, is it bad to be focused on the pass and not really looking to worry about the run as much? Because sometimes you got a big name like that, you worry about getting him his touches. And I think Daniel Jones, against this lack of pressure, at least that's the expectation with the 49ers and all the injuries, I think that's the ideal spot for Daniel Jones. You guys are watching more plays than me, but it seems like pressure, like most young quarterbacks, is his problem. When he has a nice clean pocket, he can throw the ball. 49ers, unless they can get pressure, it feels like this might be a really good game for Daniel Jones. Last thought, I think all the talk, whatever the merit, about the field, you play on that field, you see more of your teammates go down than any time ever. You go sit in West Virginia for a week thinking about playing on that field again. If you're a player, I always refer to Chris with this kind of thing, but aren't you worried about that field this week?
Yeah, you just want to get the hell home if you play for the 49ers.
Which is an advantage Giants, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yep. I've done that a million times as a player, stayed on the West Coast. It's never worked out in that second game, RJ. And so, yeah, I think there is something to be said about the psychology of it after all the major injuries that they had on that same field.
Now, under Harbaugh, the 49ers had a lot of success when they would stay in Youngstown. In general, it feels like this is more in vogue, these kind of extended camps. Belichick did it in Colorado before the Mexico City game. But I think coming off of this catastrophe injury-wise doesn't feel like the right time for it. Obviously, they couldn't call an audible. It's just I think it's advantage Giants.
RJ Bell joins us here on the show. RJ, my first question has to do with the Monday night game. Dave kind of teased it. Ravens given 3.5. You get the extra half point. It feels like to me a trap to take Kansas City. Am I wrong?
No. Let's talk about trap games, right? Because that's a phrase you hear all the time. It's not like it's in the dictionary. So in my opinion, and I have been betting sports pretty much every day since I was 14. So I'll give my expertise on trap games, which is that it's a game that looks juicy to the public because it feels easy. Now, I get you could say, well, Kansas City's the champ and they're getting 3.5. But I think there's another counter narrative that makes it not a trap in that Lamar wants revenge. And yeah, Kansas City doesn't care as much about this game. I don't agree with that narrative, but there, I do think, in a sense, Ravens want to make a statement. But I think by the same sense, the Chiefs want to make a statement, which is you're not as good as us. And this hasn't been discussed as much. There's one bye now this year. The winner of this game will have the inside track for the bye. It's a huge thing not to have to play that first weekend. So I think both teams are ultra motivated. Another factor, Kansas City has played Lamar two other times. This will be the third time. I think everybody feels that being familiar with that Baltimore offense is an advantage because it's so unlike anything else. I actually, in fact, on Mr. Michael Kay's show, my best bet was Kansas City.
RJ, let's look to the game that has the largest spread this weekend in the NFL. The Colts are at home laying 11.5 against the Jets. Now, here's the thing. The Jets have been awful, but I haven't been overly impressed with Phillip Rivers with the Colts. He turns the ball over too much. He had another bad red zone turnover in that game against the Vikings. I do think the Colts running game is on track with Jonathan Taylor. How do you see the complexion of this game playing out?
The Colts are one of the more interesting teams. Last year, they had a Week 17 game, and every gambler gives special attention to the games he bets. And you feel affinity if a team wins for you, and you feel disdain if they lose for you. Now, I try to fight that, but there is some of that with every gambler. And last year, Week 17, I thought Colts are going to make a statement. They're a team of the future. They got beat. And I was like, wow. And then I saw them get beat Week 1 against the Jags, which was a shocker. And I was like, wow, this all this jibber-jabber about this team and how good the GM is, I started becoming a pessimist. But then you look at it, and last week we did have the Colts. There was a lot of talk of the Colts really playing well against the Jags. And that's an example of the scoreboard seems so different than that. But you dig in, they actually did play pretty well. And then against Minnesota, they rolled. And now all of a sudden, they're back in favor. So I am optimistic generally about the Colts, but the Jets have suffered from what I would call, let's say, mass recognition. And we're seeing that with Detroit, for example, which is everyone at once kind of agreeing on a team. Right? Because with the Jets, even before last week, maybe in New York City there was pessimism or maybe too much optimism in some corners, but in general there was Sam Darnold, yeah, maybe. This is the year he has to do it. That was maybe a general consensus. Now it's gone to, oh my gosh, how bad is this team? Is this the worst team in the NFL? That literally has been the conversation in the last week. I think that's the time you want to look to play a team because they're at the low point, right? So high, buy low. Do the Jets get much lower? The only concern I have is I wonder if this team is still together. Is there so much tumult inside the building that you don't want to buy even when they're low? If I felt like the Jets were single-minded, and I look at the Giants, obviously there's tumult there with the bad performance, the injuries, but my sense is the Giants are playing together with a new coach as a team. If I knew that about the Jets, I'd play them this week. I'm uncertain about it. I don't know what you guys think.
All right, the man who gives us the finest in jibber-jabber, R.J. Bell, joins us here, 98.7
Mr.
ESPN.
T and me.
Yeah, R.J., Cowboys, everyone loves to either bet on or against the Cowboys. They're America's team and loved and hated for a reason. Miraculous win last night. Last week, still didn't cover the number. Now they go on the road off a tremendous high. The spread opened up at 3.5 Seattle. Now it's up to 5. Is that too many points for the Seahawks? Because that 12th man, that huge home field advantage doesn't really exist this week. Is that too many points to be given the Cowboys?
I'm of two minds on this game. One is that if you look at Dallas's stats, they last year were a 10-win team. They won 8, but they should have been a 10-win team. Now, the inverse of that, you look at Green Bay's stats, Green Bay was like a 9-win team, even though they won 13. So the math guys, Fezzik, for example, who's on my show. He's the only two-time Super Contest champion. He's a not a typical professional bettor, but a hardcore professional bettor. He doesn't care about wins and losses when it comes to the season. He's just saying, oh, Green Bay, 9-win team. You know, Dallas, 10-win team. Now, the idea that Dallas would be favored at 8 wins over a 13-win team seems absurd, but typically the spread looks at the stats and not the scoreboard. Now, on the other hand, do we think we understand as a, you know, football collective, do we understand every stat that matters? For example, Belichick always outperforms his stats in the long run, meaning if you just looked at 10 years and say, let's look at his stats. Okay, how many games should the Pats have won? He wins more. He's the only coach that his stats and his wins and losses are not aligned. What does that tell us? Does Belichick understand something about him, predicting the result of football games, or at least what wins football games, that we don't, that Vegas doesn't, and no one maybe does except for him? So Dallas underperforms their stats pretty consistently. Wins and losses are less than their stats. Could it be they're missing something that we aren't accounting for? So in general, the fan, Barney at the bar, says scoreboard, and he looks at the wins and losses. The pro bettors typically say stats, screw the scoreboard, and they're there on that extreme. I sit probably two-thirds towards the pro bettors, but I think there's mysteries we don't understand that show themselves in wins and losses, and Dallas underperforms all the time. So statistically, Dallas is probably the value here against Seattle. I wonder, though, why does Dallas lose as much as they do? Though last week, obviously an exception, but I think I was more about Atlanta losing the game. Imagine Dallas being 0-2. In theory, that wouldn't change a thing. If Greg the Leg had missed that last field goal, does that change how good Dallas is? Not one iota. Mm. And imagine an 0-2 Dallas team being this close in the spread to an undefeated Seattle team, but it would have been likely that, but maybe a little higher because the public would have overreacted to the loss. But man, does it show you stats and wins and losses? In the long run, they even out, but not always. Thus, I'm leaning Dallas. I don't want them to lose. I don't want to bet my money on this team, though.
That makes sense. Seattle's defense isn't very good either, though.
Well, it's funny. The rush defense is really good. It's their pass defense. It's a problem, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly right. All right, RJ, last one for me. New England Patriots. I mean, they were right there to beat Seattle up in Seattle, coming off a loss. Bill Belichick, I know how much you love Bill Belichick. Going up against the Raiders team at home. Raiders coming off a huge Monday night win, so you know, shorter week for them. What do you feel? How do you feel about the Patriots laying 5.5 in this game?
Yeah, this line's gone down just in the last 24 hours. I think Cam Newton might be a little bit of we'll go fugazi here for our.
Really?
All right, and here's why. Now, I'm not saying that he's not an NFL-level quarterback. I'm saying right now there's a talk, you know, what? He's the 8th best quarterback in football? And I wonder. So let's think about week one, right? So week one, they play a Miami team that Belichick has a problem with. Remember, this is my Miami team that beat them in Miami an inordinate amount of times in the last 10 years, like shockingly a lot. And then they kept him out of the bye with a shocking win at the end of last year. So, and it's a former disciple. So no doubt Belichick was ready for that game, and he fooled him. It was the first time in 20 years that the opponent didn't know what offense the Pats were going to run. And because of that, it was a real advantage in game one. And Cam ran the ball 15 times, second most he ever ran in his career. It felt like a college game, and it felt like it was trickery. And that's what the game's about to some degree, but it isn't something you can move forward with, right? Then you look at Seattle and you say, wow, what a performance. But you actually look at it, Seattle's pass D is really bad. And Greg Cosell made an interesting point before that first down or fourth down or last play of the game on the 1 yard line. Is he missed a seam route that he, as Cosell said, a professional quarterback should make a majority of the time, a throw that would have been the end of the game. Isn't that the Cam story, right? He'll make the spectacular play, but miss the more common play. And I just wonder, the combination of running so much against Miami, it felt positive, but it wasn't really about his passing. And then Seattle being so bad on pass D, and let's assume that's correct, that maybe Cam doesn't look quite as good or isn't quite as good as he looks. I also think this, if you listen to that press conference when he was talking about that last play, he said, you know, maybe we went to the well one too many times. And to me, that was the beginning of, effectively, he was questioning the play call. And you might say, oh, you're picking at him. It's like, but have you guys ever met someone in their 30s that fundamentally changes who they are? And Cam almost looks like if he was in like a hostage video, he'd be saying some of the same things he says now. It's like he's party line, party line, party line. When the trouble starts, you got to wonder if that keeps up. I hope it does because I enjoy Belichick, but I got more questions about Cam than most. I'm not anxious to play the Raiders here, but boy, that line move, it going from 6 to 5.5 when everyone felt like, oh, Raiders off the big win, Raiders across the country, they're going to be flat. Sharp money on the Raiders. I'm staying away, but it's good. Let's just say this. Early in the week, I thought New England. I'm certainly neutral right now.
All right, RJ, let's do it. My best three games with the Lions. Here's what I got for you this week. I've got the Falcons at home laying 3 against the Bears.
Okay, let me just jump in on this one.
Okay.
In fact,
you don't want me to list all three of them first?
Oh, you know something? Let's do that. I was just going to give one point on each game. If you don't mind, though, Chris, because I'm interested, could you give me one sentence on why you like each game?
Oh, well, I don't know if we have time to do that, RJ. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Let me give you the three choices. Your answer quick, and then we'll get your game of the week. Go ahead.
Okay, so I've got the Falcons laying the 3 at home against the Bears. I've got the Giants getting 3.5 at home against the 49ers. And then I've got Washington on the road getting 7. Which one do you like?
Yeah, I don't like Washington. They have an O-lineman out. They're in trouble, I think, Washington on offense. I'm going to go – I think the Giants are the easy one here because I actually really like this. And I liked it myself. I like that you like it. And I don't know if we got 20 seconds, but if you could tell – what's the main reason you like the Giants?
Well, you have so many guys out for the 49ers, and like we talked about earlier, the psychology of those guys staying out here on the East Coast. You had all the injuries. You had guys being called up from the practice squad, not to mention you're out of your familiar surroundings in terms of your normal routine to prepare for a game. I just feel like that's a lot of things stacked against the 49ers. And the Giants, after another disappointing loss in the game coming down to the wire, I feel like this young team – they're starting to gain more and more confidence with each outing, and I think this is the time they actually break through.
I love it. I like it myself. It'd certainly be one of my final games. To end, you want one for me there, Dave?
Yeah, so you're going Giants plus 3.5 for the two of you guys. You sit at 0-2, the combination. RJ, you're 1-1 so far in our show.
Yeah, and it's funny,
this week?
I gave 3 different picks last week, 2-1, and this was the one show. So remember, Dave, that's a good tout for our 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning. You are 2-0 on my show on Saturday morning.
You know something? I like this one so much, I'm going to give the same one. I really do like the Chiefs in this game. I don't think you can dismiss the value of 3 to 3.5, meaning it's 3.5 now. That is so valuable. That's the most common margin in the NFL. And finally, you can't dismiss Lamar has struggled against the very best teams. Third time is another charm. Kansas City plus 3.5 Monday night.
RJ, great job. Great job.
All
wonderful,
right.
Sensational, brilliant stuff as always. I will talk to you in the
morning. I'm berating you into loving me. Thank you, Dave.
Right. Talk to you in the morning. All right. That, of course, the RJ Bell Report brought to you by Resorts World Catskills, featuring live table games, thousands of slots, and Sportsbook 360. Your closest resort experience, Resorts World Catskills, we're open. Come play. Now, today on ESPN Daily, guys, the SEC finally kicks off this weekend. It's the latest in a college season that seems stranger than ever, but may end up looking familiar. Hear why on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. UFC returns to Fight Island for UFC 253 tomorrow, Saturday night. Adesanya versus Costa, Reyes versus Blachowicz. You don't want to miss this one. UFC 253 exclusively available on ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Visit ESPNPlus.com/PPV for more details. All right, so let's bring him in. The great Paul Feinbaum joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Breakdown another week of college football. Paul, this is wild. rather than even break down the games with you, it's like, all right, well, this conference is back. Last week it's the Big Ten. This week it's the Pac-12. Are we inching closer to some semblance of normalcy as far as college football is concerned, or is this still just off the walls this season?
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy. On August 11th, for those who don't follow this in real time, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 both announced they were done. And last week, the Big Ten came back. Last night, the Pac-12 came back. And it's, yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what they were doing while they were gone. Instead of playing a normal college football season, is 12 games plus a championship game. The Big Ten is now going to play, I think, eight or nine, and the Pac-12 is hoping to get in seven plus a championship game. So college football has never been more bizarre. We have gone through 3 weeks of the season, which, in all honesty, has been utterly forgettable. It may change this weekend when the SEC comes back. So that is your college football update brought to you by whomever.
Paul, how much of this, Paul, in your opinion, how much is this the fact that the optics, or, you know, how the general public feels about, you know, college athletes testing positive for COVID-19 has changed over the last couple of weeks?
That's it. I was watching a film clip that we were running today on our show, recapping the last 6 months. And, you know, even until late July or August, college football leaders were saying, you know, we just don't know how it's possible. And then I don't know what changed. I really don't. I think the NFL showing back at camp in August was a reawakening for people that it can be done. Baseball went through that little patch where it seemed like it was over, and now we're about to have the playoffs. And I think college football panicked when with two of the Big Five out, and then a lot of other conferences too, the MAC, the Ivy, you know, countless others. And then they sat there and realized people aren't freaking out as much. And I don't say this cavalierly, but coaches were saying, you know, to them, to their friends, you know, okay, we got a bunch of positives, they're all fine. And I think because, and I say this cautiously, because up until this point, nothing cataclysmic has happened. And I realize a young man died at a smaller school, but nothing that has just turned the sport upside down. These are competitive people, just like business people, and they basically said, we're going to figure it out, and that's where we are. And now the real fun starts. And I don't mean that jokingly. Notre Dame had to cancel a game this week. The team that played last week had to cancel a game. That's the first time, you know, we suspect something happened on the football field. So the more that you have in the pot, the more possibilities of problems. But you know, can they get it done? Nobody knows.
I wouldn't mind if my school had to cancel their game this weekend, but that's just me. Paul, earlier this week, Greg Sankey came out and he expressed concern about the disparity in the number of games that were played by the teams in the different conferences. He said it was more of an uphill climb when you have more games to play, just because so much goes into making sure that the teams can get on the field and play safely on Saturday. Do you think he has a legitimate concern as it pertains to the selection process with the college football playoff?
Well, remember, as the commissioner of the SEC, he cares about his league. And I think what he's really saying is, you know, what happens if Florida is undefeated and then loses to Alabama in the championship game? And, you know, it's a highly regarded team. It lost to the number two team in the country. And it gets left out because Oregon is 8-0, you know, with no real quality wins. I think it's a legitimate concern, but in my mind, I think you have to base everything on the competition this year. I mean, I don't care if you miss the game, if you're Clemson and you miss the Wake Forest game, or you miss the Duke game, but you better not miss the Notre Dame game. And that goes for, you know, you can fill that slide up with any schools you want. I think you have to look at, okay, you know, three or four quality games. What did the team look like? How do they do? How do they compare versus a cumulative record? And, you know, for those in college athletics who say, well, we've never done this before, college football players probably should be expanded this year. It's not going to. But everything else has changed. I mean, I don't need to tell you guys how bizarre the sports market looks right now. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the NBA finals yet, and we're almost in October. Baseball expanded, and I just think college football still operates on a different axis of, you know, we can't change because we're college football, when This year, everything is different.
Paul, I just wanted to follow up on that, and you mentioned it, and that was my question. I mean, wouldn't – I mean, with the discrepancy and when these, you know, different conferences are starting, how many games are going to play, wouldn't this be the opportunity now to expand – even if it's just for this one year, to expand the playoffs?
Yes, but you guys have to understand the mindset of college football administrators and the people that run this. I mean, they are living in the past. The NCAA came out yesterday with some new proposal legislation that essentially for postseason. I mean, there's 43 bowls. You don't have to have a winning record. I mean, you really don't have to have any record. Yeah, I mean, you can lose every game and get invited to some bowl. That's how ridiculous it is, because they're trying to support. I mean, these bowl games do make money. Let me say this in a quiet whisper that, you know, ESPN controls most of them. They're television events, and this year we don't know if, you know, how many fans are going to travel or even go to the game. So they want to make sure that, you know, the week before Christmas, while you're sitting around, you got 15 bowl games on that weekend. And you know, who cares whether, you know, some team hasn't won a game or has only won three games? They're in a bowl. I mean, so, but college football won't change. I mean, the NCAA changed that, but the people that run the college football playoff, you know, should definitely add another week. But then that means that the Rose Bowl can't be played on January 1st. And the antediluvian mentality of this sport is that has to be done. That is sacrosanct.
Paul, before we let you go, there was a bipartisan legislation that was introduced to Congress yesterday on the name, image, and likeness front regarding the NCAA and how they conduct business and amateurism status for student-athletes. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and give us some of the highlights?
Yeah, former player Anthony Gonzalez was one of the supporters of he proposed the bill. And, I mean, we're still about 9 months away. But sometime next spring or summer, the light switch is going off and college athletes are going to finally be able to get paid. We still don't know to what degree, and they're going to not be paid for playing. They will be paid for their likeness, meaning they can do commercials. They can endorse certain things within a limitation. The administrators in college athletics are still against this. So that's why Congress is intervening. If Congress passes this legislation, that means it's universal. That means that the NCAA really can't do very much about it. They have to adhere to it. So it's a positive step. It's still a long way from being over, though.
All right, Paul, as always, we appreciate it. Enjoy college football and whatever semblance it's in this week, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it very much.
All right, absolutely. That, of course, is Paul Feinbaum. He joins us every Friday at 10:30. Chris, you're one win away. One win away from the victorious wager against one Bart Scott. One win away.
That's it. That's it. I want Bart Scott to have the money for the Chris Canty Foundation. Can't wait to get the check for him. You know the kids need it, Dave.
Tell them to bring me my money.
There now, you go. But the Lakers looked good last night, man. I told you they were going to come out with a different energy than they did in Game 3, and they didn't disappoint, man. The fact that you had six Lakers in double figures and the plays that Rondo made down the stretch offensively, coupled with LeBron James putting the clamps on Jamal Murray in the last 5 minutes of that ball game, that was the difference.
Yeah, I see, that's what I thought it was. I mean, this guy has been in the league for a million years. He has so many miles logged onto this body, and in crunch time, biggest game of the season, you know what? I got the best player on the other team, and he completely locked him down, Rick. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's great. Anthony Davis was great in the especially in the first quarter. What, he had 12 points in the first 5 minutes of that
great
game.
Yep. Mm-hmm. How nervous were you on that when he hurt his ankle, though, Chris?
I was nervous.
Yeah.
I was nervous. But the fact that he walked it off, he came back, hit the free throws, and then after gimping around a few possessions, he kind of looked like he was back in the flow of things. It kind of settled me down. But that series would completely change if Anthony Davis wasn't able to play. If he wasn't able to finish that game and he wasn't able to be available in the next game, then you're talking about the complexion of the series being completely different.
But he was so good, and he's been
good. No, he
so
was good.
And
he was good. But the Lakers hustled last night.
The two of those guys. And if I have to hear one more person say, well, this is exactly where Denver wants to be, down 3-1, it's the most ridiculous thing that I've heard, because this is not exactly where they want to be. This is just where they've actually had success this postseason.
No, but you don't want to be down 3-1.
You never want to be. Oh, this is exactly what they want. They're in their happy spot. They're down 3-1. Yeah, this is exactly what they want.
Dave, the Lakers have two top five players in the world. Like, that's not where you want to be if you're the Nuggets at all. At all.
No.
And this series is over. This series is completely over. It's over. Oh. Denver's not going to win three straight. Stop.
I hope not. Not for the kids. For the kids. Because if the Lakers wind up losing this, nobody gets any money.
No, Barr gets paid. Barr gets the money.
Oh, I thought it was he had the Clippers, you had the Lakers.
No. He was just saying that the Lakers weren't going to make it to the NBA Finals. And I said he's ridiculous.
Oh, okay. Well, which does seem ridiculous. All right. Yeah. Let's go. Rick, you're 2-3-1 in our six selections.
Yep.
Chris, you're 3-3, as am I. Rick, would you like to go first? Would you like to go second? Would you like to go third?
I would like to go. I'm going to go second this time. I'm going to go second.
All right. Chris, you want to go first or last?
Yeah, I'll lead it off with probably the most surprising pick of the week for any of us. I'm going to do it, man. I'm actually going to do it because I think it's a little bit rich. I am going to take the Jets.
Oh, my God.
And the 11.5 points. I'm going to do it because you know what, Dave? It's a win-win scenario for me. Either I look like a genius and they cover, or they get blown out again and we get to come on the radio and kill them going into a short week against the Denver Broncos. So it's a win-win for me.
All right, Jets plus 11.5, selection one. Selection two, Chris, go ahead. Go all
okay,
three.
My second selection, I'm going to take the New York football Giants and the 3.5 points going up against the depleted 49ers team. We've beaten this thing like a dead horse. I mean, it's obvious the 49ers are not the same team because of all the injuries, so I'm going to take the Giants. And then my last pick, even though R.J. Bell tried to warn me off it, I am going to roll with the Washington football team on the road getting 7 points. I know they've got some injuries on the offensive line, but I'm not worried about that because Dwayne Haskins gets the ball out in a hurry. 2.4 seconds, the fourth fastest among quarterbacks with 25 or more dropbacks. So I'm not worried about him getting hit a whole lot. And I do think this matchup favors the Washington football team's defense because they got a strong front seven. Cleveland wants to run the ball. I just feel like it's a good matchup for Washington.
All right. He's got underdog, underdog, underdog. Rick, go ahead. Your three games are.
I can tell you this. I wish I was that dead horse right now. 5 weeks. I'm going to also take the Giants. I'm buying in. I'm drinking the blue Kool-Aid. I'll take the Giants plus the 3.5. Like a good old dog. I'm also going to take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I'm going to lay the 5.5 points. I don't trust Jeff Driscoll. I just don't do it. I can't trust Jeff Driscoll. And I think because they're still trying to figure it out, this is in a situation where Tampa takes their foot off the gas. So I'm going to take Tampa. And then for my final pick, I'm going to go with R.J. Bell. It feels like a trap to me, but he loves it, so I guess I love it. I mean, Pat Mahomes getting 3.5. I'll take it. I'll take KC plus the 3.5.
All right. I actually wanted to take Philadelphia. I wrote it down, and then I crossed it out because I just physically could not take the Philadelphia Eagles. I couldn't do it. I can't. I think they're going to win and cover. I just my body would not allow that to happen. I'm gonna jump on board with you guys, and I hope to God this happens. They get their first win. I'll take the Giants plus the 3.5 against the Niners. I'm going to go to Sunday Night Football. I think everyone's so down on the Saints. It opened at 6. Now it's down to 3. I'll take the Saints and lay the 3 at home. I think Drew Brees has a big bounce back against Aaron Rodgers. And you and I are going head-to-head. Give me Baltimore minus 3.5, Monday Night Football game you can watch on ESPN against the Kansas City Chiefs. I told you you'd hate that game for me. I told you.
No, I hate it for me because I asked the question because I feel like it's a trap, and I, for some reason, put myself right in the middle of the trap.
All right, I'm taking the Ravens, and I'm going to lay the 3.5.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.